You are listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast featuring some of Indiana's most fascinating men and women whose impact has shaped our state, our communities, and us. Join us as we discuss their imprint on our history. Leaders and Legends is brought to you by Veteran Strategies Incorporated, your local veteran business enterprise specializing in public relations, media relations, public outreach, crisis communications, and digital photography. My name is Robert Vane, Principal of Veteran Strategies, former Deputy Chief of Staff to Mayor Greg Ballard, and Communications Director for the Indiana Republican Party. I'm honored to be your host for our discussion. You are listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast presented by Veteran Strategies, a local veteran public relations enterprise, and sponsored by Girl Scouts of Central Indiana, the Crown Plaza Hotel and Grand Hall and Conference Center at Historic Union Station, and McAllister Machinery, your friendly neighborhood Caterpillar dealer. We are here today with former chairman of their respective parties, Robin Winston and Mike McDaniel, longtime friends. They are here with us today to talk about getting along, getting things done, having a drink, having a smile, and perhaps the way things used to be. But we are also joined by Jim Shella, former podcast guest more than once, and the dean of Statehouse and Political Reporters. He is the guest host for today, and we're going to let him take it away and see if his interview skills have rusted since Indiana Week in Review.
Good afternoon, Robert. Thank you for that introduction. Mike, Robin, great to see you.
Good to see you.
Robert talked about folks from opposite parties getting along. You know, I did Indiana Week in Review on public broadcasting for 25 years, and both of you have been panelists on that program many times. And the one quote that I always shared with folks who don't really understand how the political world works is from somebody who said that with regard to Week in Review, that the best show was in the parking lot afterward. We found that no matter how much people did battle on the air, they still got along. They still loved to share experiences. Robin, when you talk to Democrats, do they question how you feel about Republicans?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, you know, you should just put some bleachers up and have people on the set, because if they could hold up a placard and tell you what you should have said and what you should have done, then they could just be their own Cecil B. DeMille sitting there, because they always call you. Well, you're sitting on the set. This is an age of beepers, Mike. They'd be beeping you, saying you didn't do this, you weren't striding enough, you should have tore his face off. Meanwhile, they're sitting at home drinking a coffee, right? And they're telling you what you should have said. So yes, I mean, there are those. Then you get the ones like the pitcher on the mound in Game 7 in the series, where everybody's out there telling them what to pitch. Well, that's kind of like being on Indiana Week in Review or trying to do these shows, because, well, here, make sure to say this and get this dig in and make sure you do that. And why do you treat them well? And you shouldn't do this. And you should. And it's like, if I listen, the time they told me what I should say was longer than the daggone show. So, no, I mean, people do that all the time. You're absolutely right.
I had a crazy idea that, you know, that not everything that the Republicans said was always the best idea. Sometimes the Democrats had a good idea, and when they did, we ought to say so. And my theory was that people will be so surprised that they'll give you style points for at least acknowledging the fact that somebody has a good idea or a better way to do something. Wrong. I mean, I'd get criticized anytime I say, you know what, that makes sense. And I'd get 5 phone calls as soon as the show was off that night saying, are you crazy saying they had a good idea? You know, that kind of stuff. And it just drove me crazy, because that's just not the way I am. But, you know, it's true. I mean, and I think that's part of the reason Robin and I got along for as long as we did and still do to this day, because he was always a gentleman. And he was always willing to step up and say, you know what, they're right about that. Or I'd do the same when I had the chance. And it felt that way. But, boy, you're right. I can tell you one quick story. We all have a mutual friend in Lisa Kobe, who's a very ardent Republican. My former press secretary when I was Republican state chairman. And Lisa, very passionate about politics.
And not afraid to share her opinion.
She would call me every Friday at about 10 o'clock, like clockwork. Have you got the topics yet? Not hi, how are you? Not anything else. Have you got the topics yet? Well, you might say on this one, and you might in that. And finally, one day I said to Lisa, I said, Lisa, you know what? Next time I can't do the show, I'm going to suggest to Jim that he have you on there. Oh, no, God, I couldn't do that, you know.
I did call her once and got a no.
People have no idea that when you're sitting there and have to interact and you don't know which way the conversation is going to go, it's completely different. Yeah. And you can always just sit there and throw out talking points, and we all work those in. We got to the point where we could. But it's not always easy to do that because Jim, being Jim, was excellent at steering a conversation to get where he wanted to be. And I say that as a compliment because this guy was the best in the business for a long, long time.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it was always more difficult. But like Robin, I inevitably – but what's funny to me is when you'd get a call on Fridays, you know, we'd call around. If we got the topics, we'd call around, try to get some information before we went on the show.
At State Party, you'd call me.
You'd be amazed at how much quicker our calls got returned on Friday than it did Monday through Thursday. If I called the president pro tem or the speaker on Friday, I was called back within 5 minutes because they knew they were a topic on the show.
Save all your business for Friday.
So anyway, it's always kind of funny, but what was even funnier to me was I'd get a call from Mitch Daniels on occasion when he was governor. And if he anticipated that something that happened that week was going to be on the show, he'd call and say, well, if you get a chance, you might work into the thing, you know. And I said, wait a minute, I thought you didn't watch this show, this little show as you referred to it. He watched it every week. And if he didn't, his staff told him what was on every week. But he'd call and make recommendations, which always cracked me up. For a guy that didn't watch that little show, he knew what was going on every week.
I like the guys from D.C., though. You know, so our office was at 1 North Capitol, right there on the corner.
State Democratic Party headquarters office.
And these dudes are in the Marriott, in a room, using their cell phone to call me to tell me what my talking points are. And I'm standing in my office, and I said, where are you guys? Well, we're at the Marriott. I said, look out your window. Come up the street, bring it up here. Well, then when they bring you the talking points from the DGA, Democratic Governors Association, Robert, they're like 4 pages long.
How are you going to get four pages
of talking points?
Yeah.
You know, and then I looked and it was like, and this is what we're doing in Vermont. And it was like, whoa, this isn't Vermont, boys. But they had just cut, paste, and use the same thing.
Because, I don't know, I was on the show maybe a dozen times. I mean, Mike, you were on hundreds of times.
Thousands of times.
As a Republican, yeah.
21 years and 1,000 shows.
You can't, if you can remember 2 good hits per question, you're in good shape.
Yeah, but even better is when you don't want to answer a question.
Right.
And Robin's done this, and I know I did this. If question number 4 was one you just didn't want to talk about, guess what? I'd give the world's biggest filibuster answer on question 3 in hopes that I look over and see Shella going to the control room. Take number 3 out. You know, that's a goal. So yeah, we played the shot clock on a game.
Oh, yeah. For the benefit of the listeners, we would supply the topics. We would never supply the questions or what direction we wanted the discussion to go. But there's no percentage in having people on who aren't prepared to discuss subject matter. So, you know, there's an entertainment level to the program, but it is news and it's all off the cuff.
But Jim, when you were selecting the R's and the D's to be on the show, did you want people who got along?
I wanted state chairman whenever possible, state chairman or former state chairman. Dynamics were important, whether or not folks could give and take. I mean, because I'm happy to tell you that I can, off the top of my head, I can think of a Democratic state chairman who I had on who was terrible because there was no give and take. And I had a Republican state chairman on who was terrible because there was no give and take. And those people didn't get invited back, even if I got invited to play golf with them at Woodstock.
I didn't know you played with Al Hubbard at Woodstock.
It was important to have a lively yet meaningful discussion.
Oh, boy.
And there were people who couldn't get off the talking points, who refused to. And, that's a disqualifier for me.
Yeah, that's
true. I remember being on with Ann Delaney, who has a good relationship with Mike McDaniel, as far as I know.
Yeah, she was wrong for 21 straight years.
She was good for us for 21 straight years.
Oh.
And Rex Early has a good relationship, my understanding is, with Ann Delaney.
Didn't always.
Correct. Correct.
They didn't know each other when they started doing the show. They didn't know each other. But I can tell you that just a few weeks ago, Mike and Rex and Ann and I all had dinner together.
We're good friends.
And that's my point, is you see that on the show, to Jim's point about the best part being in the parking lot. But there really is a dynamic of kind of the Earl and Sam, or whatever the coyote and the dog were. And remember the cartoon where they clocked in, beat the hell out of each other, then clocked out. Good night, Sam. Good night. And so that's a real thing that people involved in politics understand, and it seems that people who aren't involved in politics maybe don't understand. Is that a fair statement?
Let's let Robin help explain this, because it's not professional wrestling. It's not fake. No. But there is an element where you have to take the party line, and you have to sometimes be contrary.
Well, yeah, and I was chairman during mayors in 99 and governor in 2000. So you had a lot of pressure on you. We're trying to win Indianapolis for the first time, I think, in 30-some years, and we're trying to get a governor reelected. So we were pretty fired up, but Mike was always straight down the middle of the fairway. There were other people in our party who wanted us to do more and to be – I remember this one leader of our party, or would be a future leader of our party, wanted me to go up to Muncie, Indiana, to David McIntosh's door and knock on his door and challenge him to debates. And I said, first off, I used his name, Jim Shella. Jim Shella's not going to drive 60 miles to see me go up and knock at some dude's door. Secondly, you got a black guy knocking at this dude's door in Muncie on University Avenue. All he's going to do is open the door and say, I'm not going to answer the door. And that's it. And so where's your big story? Well, you didn't do it. You don't have any guts. You don't have any, you know, you don't have the intensity. But it wasn't anything to compare anything to. They just wanted you to do things. And I said, that's ludicrous. I'm not going to do that. You can't do that.
And Robin, did you make the point? Because I've made the point before. It's like, we're not going to be in charge forever.
Right. Yeah. Well, the reason we're here today is because we did our job. We moved on, but we were fair, and we can see each other on opposite sides of the street and wave and say hello versus look the other way and keep going.
Well, I think a good part of that is mutual respect for the job that you did. I mean, I understood what his role was. He understood what my role was. And so as long as you did it fairly and not with a lot of animosity, you respected each other and got along. And I think the world of Robin Winston for that very reason. Always have. Now, I haven't always had that relationship with the other team. When Joe Andrew was here, he and I didn't get along at all. I remember having a news conference where I called for fair and honest elections, and he called me a racist because I called for fair and honest elections. That did not go well with me, and he and I never really got along after that. So, you know, there's a line that you don't cross, and he did. And I always thought he was kind of a weasel, and I never really got along with him that well.
Actually, you picked up that term with regard to him from one of his fellow Democrats, I do believe.
Yes.
Is it?
I should.
You want to give credit here for the
– Let me tell you, of all the years that we did Indiana Week in Review, the 21 and I did it, only one time in 21 years did Jim Shella stop in the middle of the show and said, we got to do this over.
I remember the story.
That's because Ann and I were both beating up on the same person so badly that Jim said, we can't do this.
Well, and what the heck? Let's tell the story. It was when Joe Andrew was running to be Democratic national chairman, and he held a rally at the state house.
Yeah, for national chairman.
For national chairman. Yeah, it didn't seem to make a lot of sense on the surface. But secondly, Jim Hester, who's the news photographer I was teamed with for 23 years, who is an astute political observer, when we walked away from that news conference, he said, what was different about that? I said, you tell me. He said, politicians always say us and we. And he said, I and me, over and over and over again. And we showed that tape before the discussion you're referring to on Indiana Week in Review. And the problem wasn't that you guys were beating up on him. The problem was everybody was laughing. And I said, stop. We cannot be on the air laughing at the next Democratic national chairman. I don't care what you think.
And he won. Did he not win?
It wasn't even opposition.
Yeah, it was unopposed.
Senator Clinton, right, or was it Gore?
Gore wanted him to be the chair.
It was before Clinton left office, yeah. But he was put in place by Al Gore because of Gore's coming campaign.
Yeah.
Let me make a statement and have all three of you challenge me or agree with me. The real feuds in politics are within parties, within politicians versus politicians from that party. More intense, more long-lasting than feuds between parties and between politicians of other parties. Is that a fair statement? There's a lot of bad blood left over from primary X or primary Y because it's within the family.
Well, I've experienced that clearly in my political life, but it used to be that you had those family fights, and then everybody got in lockstep to go win the general election because they knew how important it was. Those days are gone, and most of that has to do with the internet. People are either right or wrong, and I'm not going to be for them. You know, if you're even with you're in the same party, if you disagree forever. You don't get together and unite where we used to do that. And I think that's a major, major change in politics.
Robin?
I had Lake County, man. Come on. Seriously. Now, here's what these dudes did to me. Every Friday, they had a meeting in Lake County. I'll tell you, because it wasn't the same meeting. At 8 o'clock at the patio in Maryville, that was the Greek guys, okay? So that's Panos, Manos, Kalinsis, and those dudes, all right? Wait a minute. At 8 o'clock, same time, in Wicker Park, they had a meeting. And that was the Itches, that Stiglitz, you know, Yovanovitch, that's all the Slovaks, right? Now watch this. And at 8 o'clock in Gary, Rudy Clay had a meeting at the same time. And that's the brothers over in Miller Beach.
Was that with the Claymates?
Claymates weren't there. In fact, we had to open up a Chinese restaurant early to accommodate the meeting. So here's how they play me. It's like, are you going to go to that meeting? I said, well, which meeting am I going to go to? Well, you're going to go over and see Blondie. That's what they call Bob Pastrick. Mm-hmm. He's in Maryville, right? So if I go Maryville, if you know anything about Lake County, you can't get across Lake County in 5 minutes. So then I go over and I'll always be late for Wicker Park. Oh, so you're late for us. Stiglitz would say, you're late for us. And I'm like, oh, man. Then I go over and I'm Uncle Tom and Gary because I'm like, oh, so you went over there to the white boys. All right. So I had to play all three, Gumby, all three, right, to make everybody happy. So what did I steward to doing was going, I'd mix them up because they would never come together. And they still don't. They still don't. I mean, I get an elevator in the state capitol. Prominent attorney here who was in the Biden administration gets in an elevator beside another guy. I said, hey, how you doing? Fine. Yeah. He speaks to me. He doesn't speak to the other guy because he's mad at him for a 1984 state convention decision on attorney general. And I'm like, are you serious? You guys don't speak? I don't speak to him. And just looks, bing, bing, the elevator goes up and that's it. So, yeah. And then don't even mention Marion County slating. So
oh, yeah. I was just getting ready to mention Marion County slating.
So those are enemies for life, right? Yeah. And they, you know, you're sitting there. Not honestly, Mike. Come on, let's tell the truth. We're trying to raise millions of dollars. We're trying to do our job, and somebody's mad that my cousin didn't get appointed to the Lawrence Township Advisory Board. And so because he didn't get appointed, and it, when they filled the vacancy, they put so-and-so's member of her church on there instead. You're like, seriously? Really? Are you one of nine people? Seriously? So, yes, they stick around for a long time, Robert.
You gotta remember, I got to be chairman during the Rex Early, Steve Goldsmith primary for governor.
I was just, that exactly was where I was heading.
And to say that the party was split would be an understatement. And talk, of course,
talk about that, Mike. I want to hear.
Well,
that
Rex was a personal friend, and when I ran for chairman in a five-way race that I won on like the fifth ballot, that I don't understand why it took five, because every member of state committee told me they voted for me on every ballot. I don't know why it took so long, but I did. But anyway. You know, if you think division within the party, I mean, they people chose up sides on that and did not get along for a while. And I think it helped cost Goldsmith the general election. But
you think if Goldsmith was unopposed, he would have beaten O'Bannon in 96?
Could have. Yeah. I was a personal friend of Rex, and I wanted to run for chairman. And I went to Rex and said, look, first thing they're asking me is, will I be neutral in a primary? And I said, you got to understand that I got to play this down the middle, because I can't get there and not do what I said I would do. And he said, no, I get that. You got to do what you got to do. He didn't mean it, but he said it anyway, which gave me permission.
But he had been state chairman. He exactly. understood the role.
You know, trying to follow Rex Early like I did on Indiana Week in Review and then follow him. I followed Hubbard, but Early had been there just before. So it seemed like I spent my time following a legend and one of the most colorful politicians in state history. And still is a dear friend of this day, just turned 85 recently.
Well, and someone asked me once who I modeled my PR style after, and I go, it's equal parts Bill Blomquist, who's the dean of liberal arts or was at IUPUI, IQ of about 300, and I go, and Rex Early.
Well,
and they go, well, how do you mesh the two? And I'm like, well, you got to be really smart, and you got to be really sassy and mouthy all at the same time. And if you can mesh the two, you're in pretty good shape.
We could all tell stories, real stories, about Rexford Carlisle Early from Vincennes, Indiana. In fact, I've threatened to write the unauthorized biography, which would be a big seller, I think. But to give you an example.
He's already written an autobiography.
He always was good for a good quote, as Jim will tell you. But we're getting ready to go to the National Convention in Cleveland last time, and I said, I'll drive you up there. You're going. I can't get around anymore. No, I'll drive you. We'll get you on and off buses. We'll do all that. You got to go. Well, he became the state Trump chairman. He called and said he recommended me, and I said, you know, can't do it. And he said, so he ended up doing it. So anyway, I get a call from some young lady from ABC National News about 2 weeks out from the convention. She said, and this is the question she asked me, really, I'm serious, this is what she asked me. She said, would having Mike Pence on the ticket with Donald Trump help in Indiana? And of course, I politely said, yes, we think that would be a major benefit to the party, and you know, blah, 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 I'll give her all that. Then she said at the end of the interview, she said, is there anybody else I should talk to? I said, you need to talk to the state Trump chairman. So 20 minutes later, I swear, the phone rang. She's on the phone. She's laughing hysterically. She said, I want to thank you for giving me that lead. She said, he gave me some very interesting quotes. I said, like what? She said, I asked him the same question I asked you about, would having Mike Pence on the ticket be helping Indiana? He said, well, is a 20-pound robin fat? Typical Rex Early. But let me tell you one more, and I'll get off this, because I know you want to move on. We're at the convention to highlight the tension between Goldsmith and Early. We're at the convention in Minneapolis. And the night after they put Sarah Palin on the ticket, some gal from National Public Radio came up and put a microphone in Rex's face and said, now that you have your ticket together, what are you guys going to do? And he says, well, we're going to get drunk and chase broads. And of course, we all standing around here started looking at each other like, you got to be kidding me. And she said, may I ask you, she kind of laughed. She said, may I ask you who you are and where you're from? He said, yeah, I'm Steve Goldsmith from Indianapolis, Indiana. Didn't miss a beat.
Let me promo my podcast.
Oh, here we go. You probably haven't come on the
show.
Be
your last one. This may be your last one.
You are listening to Leaders and Legends, a podcast presented by Veteran Strategies, a local veteran public relations enterprise, and sponsored by Girl Scouts of Central Indiana, the Crown Plaza Hotel and Grand Hall and Conference Center at Historic Union Station, and McAllister Machinery, your friendly neighborhood Caterpillar dealer. On the podcast, we have Mike McDaniel, former chairman of the Indiana Republican Party, Robin Winston, former chairman of the Indiana Democratic Party, and Jim Shella, former chairman of Indiana Week in Review. Jim.
Let me apologize right now to the Girl Scouts for destroying them.
I was going
to
say, there you go.
Why do you think they're not here?
But I just think I got to share one story since we're talking about Rex and his quotes and Indiana Week in Review and whether folks get along or not. The first Indiana Week in Review show that I did, Rex was the Republican and Andalini was the Democrat, and they did not know one another. And Ann showed up wearing a leather skirt, we were live on the radio at this point, and Rex waited until just before we went on the air and looked at Ann and said, "Do you know why men like women in leather skirts?" And she said, "No, why?" And he said, "'Cause it makes them smell like a new car." And at that point, I got to act serious and talk on TV.
What did she say? What did she say?
There was no response. There was no response.
Wow.
I asked a question earlier about parties getting along and chairman and that sort of thing. And this is a question we asked you, Jim, I think when we did our podcast. It was either our second or third podcast. I think it was you and Bill Benner and Mayor Ballard were like our first three. But how did you get along? So you're really good friends with Mike McDaniel and you're really good friends with Robin Winston and these other politicos, and you've got to go ask them tough questions that you know that they just either don't want to answer or the topic is uncomfortable or unfavorable to them politically. How did you handle that as a professional? Because I remember being interviewed by you during RFRA and you didn't pull any punches, but you said, look, man, you're in a bad spot, but I got to ask these questions.
That's what I'm there for. That's what I'm there for, and they know that's what I'm there for. People have asked me how do you ask tough questions of people who are your friends. I've always felt that if they're my friends, they understand, and I can ask them tougher questions than I can ask somebody else.
Well, let's talk about media relations for a second. I mean, I'm sure you went through the same thing. I always got along with them because my theory was that if you were accessible. And you're always straight up, more times than not, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt because you're not trying to hide something or you're trying to do whatever. If I thought our party had messed up, I'd say it. I said, we messed up. It goes back to my theory of trying to acknowledge things when they happen. But because of that, I was treated very well by the media over the many years I was involved in this stuff. And I think that had something to do with it. Accessibility, they knew they could call me at 11 or 12 at night, which they did on occasion when something broke, and then trying to be straight up with them, trying to give them a good quote.
Yeah, be honest with them. I mean, like, let's see, in 99, Joe had become national chair. Joe Andrews. So we have a free-for-all for state chair. Pete Manos, Kip Two, and Shaw Friedman all have been telling me they were going to be the chair. At that point, I'm political director or something. So the governor Governor O'Bannon called me and said, I want you to come up and meet with us at our house. And I leave home and I tell my wife, I'm going to go up. I'm not going to be chair. Right? I go up. I sit down. Judy O'Bannon offers me a Diet Sprite cola. I didn't even know they made those things. But anyway, it's like, sure. And you drink it. You're like, oh, yeah, yes, ma'am. I appreciate it. And you keep moving to the side. But anyways, you're sitting there, and they got the fireplace going and all this stuff. And I told him that, you know, they asked me to do it, and I said I'd do it. So then I go home, right? But what he said to me was, make sure you call Mary Beth Schneider, who is a reporter, because these guys will get it quick. They'll break it quick, and she'll have to wait another day. and explain to her editor.
These guys meaning TV.
TV mm-hmm. and radio. So we did that so she could get her story in. But that's because he was a newspaper guy. Got to remember, this guy right. had the cord in newspaper. Mm-hmm. So we had the big stamp, at least on my forehead, that you have to be honest with the media at all times because the guy you're working for came from newspaper background. Plus, you know, come on, if you lie to these guys, the word's going to get around. You lie to them.
I do it once.
Yeah, you do it once right. and you're toast, and they don't want to bother with you. Now, there's some people that have been jerks, I think, that have come our way, but usually they're from out of state. I mean, usually they're from national feeds or things like that, and they don't really want to give you the time of day. They're just obligatorily moving on.
And I'm always amazed at how many politicians are scared of the media.
Yeah.
I think it's case, Mike, on our side as Republicans because the media is all liberal.
There's this general feeling that they're all out to get the Republicans, which is, which I think is true at the national level, but I've never had that happen at the state level.
I agree with that.
Not even once.
Absolutely.
And it's always been crazy, but I always, for candidates, I always say, look, if you're scared of a dog, a dog's going to nip at you even more. If you're not scared of a dog, the dog's not going to nip at you. Same thing with media. You can't be scared of them. Just understand what their job is and deal with it and do it with a smile on your face and, again, be accessible and you'll be fine. But those,
I remember when
there
I
were
worked,
a lot more of them that or, were absolutely and, scared of them.
But if you're a politician, you can talk to a reporter and give him your story or your side of the story, or you can let him go find it someplace else.
That's exactly right.
And I remember when I worked for Murray Clark when he was chairman and I was comms director, and I didn't know him very well when we first started. I knew him a little bit. He says, Robert, we don't deny the obvious. Whatever the obvious is, whether it's for us or against we don't deny the obvious. That's one of the first things he said to me. I never forgot it because there are some times where you just got to shrug your shoulders and go, we blew it. Or there's some times where you've got to go, look, you are asking me questions that I can't answer. I know the answer and I can't tell you. And a reporter will be like, okay, I get it. I'm like, I just can't tell you. Has that been your experience, Jim?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Although I think at the moment that there's a changing dynamic because Donald Trump's theory is deny the obvious and attack the messenger. And I think there's a growing number of politicians who are looking at his model and thinking that it works for them.
Yeah, you see that all the time. You see people challenging the media, guys refusing to answer questions, walking off the stage, doing their best Cam Newton after the Super Bowl impersonation. I mean, don't want to talk to anybody and wanting to walk off the stage. One thing that I always try to do with our local media, if we had a presidential visit or a vice presidential visit, we tried to make sure they were out there beyond the rope line in position with their cameras early because here come the boys in the band off the plane and they all think they're important and they'll position themselves right in front of you. So we always made sure we took care of that.
You got to take care of your local media.
Well, you have to. And then I've seen interviews. I don't know if you've ever experienced it, but you have interviews and this one guy was with a president and he kept kicking the chair saying your time's up to people. You don't do that to people when they're trying to get people on camera. I mean, you don't do that kind of thing to people.
May I ask you, Mike, and I'll ask all three of you. Mike, is there someone on the other side, a Democrat, whose political or messaging skills you've admired above all others?
Wow, that's a tough question. I've had my share of Democrats that I had a lot of respect for and really liked. Of course, I'm old school, so I immediately think of people like Larry Conrad and some others who were outstanding at messaging. And actually, in a lot of ways, I thought Frank O'Bannon was good at messaging. I really did. And because it was simple and to the point, and his theory, maybe this goes back, I hadn't thought about this, but it may go back to what Robert said about, being a newspaper background and trying to get the message so it'll be received properly in a way that a lot more people understand. And so he simplified the message. What drives me nuts is when our people complicate the messages. And I was always taught in campaign school when I went to the Republican National Committee campaign school, you don't tell them just what you're going to do. You have to tell them what the payoff is for doing that. If I'm going to go out and do this, how's that going to affect your daily life? And we are terrible at bringing the payoff line into that and telling the public, we're gonna do this, we're gonna raise taxes on gasoline, and then we're gonna say, well, yeah, we need to have better roads, but how's it gonna affect so and so and such county? Then people go, well, oh, well, I get that, you know. But we've a lot of times failed to do that. So I thought Obama was good at that kind of messaging. Of course, like I said, Larry Conrad was outstanding, I thought. But
Jim?
Those are two of my favorites.
Well, Evan Bayh stands out in my memory, not necessarily because of the message, but because of the delivery. He would decide what his message was, and that would be the answer to every question you asked. You could ask him four different ways trying to get him to tell you something more than what he thought that day's message was, and it wouldn't change.
And you thought that was a good thing?
He served two terms as governor, I'll say that.
Yeah. And two U.S. Senate.
Are you trying to say that had something to do with what he did while he was there?
Well, I think that
because his strategy was, if you don't do anything, you don't make anybody mad.
I was just going to say, he was very cautious. He was very cautious. Yeah, and he was a Democrat governor in a Republican state, and he was very protective. I think it served him well. Now, I wouldn't tell somebody else to do that.
Robin?
It would be Mitch Daniels. I mean, this guy, you know, one of the most intelligent people probably we have ever had in government ever.
Right.
Was able to slide his S's, drop his G's, and seem like a guy that was at the bait and tackle shop in Hopstead, Indiana. I mean, he just flowed very evenly. Crafted the motorcycle image. You know, the guy's brilliant. I mean, the man is brilliant. He did all those things in government. I remember watching when they were doing the RV thing. He was in some little small store, and there were some Louis L'Amour books. And he looked at them, and the Princeton almost came out in him because he was going to give a quick dissertation on the books. But then he slid the S's and the G's and said, oh, those sound like good books. I mean, so all of a sudden he went back to that. But he could have probably told you a whole thing about the writer, but he didn't do that. So I would say of the people that I've seen on their side, it would be Mitch Daniels. He did everything possible to be strong both times, running. He did an okay job as governor, but as far as messaging and staying disciplined on messaging, it was him, and it permeated. Look at his lieutenants. Holcomb was one of his lieutenants. And look where he is. I mean, they have, you know, they permeated within government now, and a lot of that is attributable to Mitch Daniels, I'd say.
The thing Mitch Daniels did too, though, was that he didn't have a canned message. There was messaging being done, as you just said, with the books, but he answered all the questions. I mean, he would hold these news conferences, especially during the General Assembly, where he would answer every question that came in for 70 minutes, and the message that came through was that he was in control and he knew what was going on and he had an answer for every possible problem.
I've said this in our podcast that we did with Governor Holcomb because Governor Holcomb ran Mitch Daniels reelect in 2008, which, you know, seems foreordained at the moment. But as someone who was comms director for the Republican Party in 2006, where we got whipped, you never would have thought that Daniels would have won like he won in 2008. Mike, you've known Mitch Daniels for 50 years?
1974.
So almost 50 years?
More than 50 years, almost 50 years.
My contention is Daniels winning Marion County in his gubernatorial reelect in 2008 by about 14,000 votes when Barack Obama carried the county in his initial run by about 120,000 votes is the greatest micro political achievement in the last generation.
I would agree with that. I of course, I believe Mitch is the best governor we've had in my lifetime. And for the better part of a decade, when you think about it, because the 2 years before he was elected, he was already basically dictating the agenda, even in this campaign. And he kept doing that the entire time he was in office for two terms. And I've never seen anybody with the ability to do that. And because he was so incredibly smart and so good at what he did, there were a couple of clinkers in there, which I still tease him about. I had
township government.
I got the chance to roast him not too long ago in front of the Legal Aid Society, and I said, I asked a question on the front. I said, how many of you here tonight, let me see a show of hands, came here because of the Commerce Connector? Everybody in the room thought that was funny, but Mitch. But they had a few, but I'm telling you, the guy is brilliant, and you look at what he's done now as president of Purdue. On top of it, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Leadership matters.
I can remember one time. Of course, I'm still mad at him for not running for president. We could be in the middle of a second term, Daniel's term.
But he himself said he thought
how much different. Yes, he did say that. How much different would the political discourse be today? Yeah.
Fair point.
Yes. In the middle of the second Daniel's term.
Let me ask a question, and actually Jim was a part of one of these podcasts. In 2019, we've lost two giants Indiana politics, Senator Birch Bayh and Senator Richard Lugar. I would assume that you had relationships, good relationships with them for a long, long time. Robin, what was your relationship like with either one or both?
Well, it was... Lugar was different. I was in college at Louisville, aspiring future governor, right? So I'm in college at Louisville, getting ready to run for student council vice president, baby. So I wrote every person running for the United States Senate and asked them to send me their brochures.
Which year is this?
This is 76. I get a brochure from Dick Lugar. It was cool.
That's year he won.
Yeah, I still have it because I showed it to Lou Gehrig. And he said they were in Marion, I think. Daniels wrote the text, and Gehrig took the photo. And they sent that to me as a student. Here's some bumper stickers. I'm in Louisville. What is he going to do? So I held on to that and showed it to the senator years later. And he remembered the piece. It was nice. It was blue and gold, I think, Mike.
Yes, it was.
It was blue and gold. Nice. Had Lugar across the front. And it closed like that. And you opened it up, and all of his text was inside. So I did that. For Birch Bayh, I'm from Western Pennsylvania. So, and that's coal mining region. Without Birch Bayh and Jennings Randolph and Bob Byrd and all those people, there is no black lung to benefit coal miners. And I met with the senator and talked to him about that. And the stories that he told me about being in the Senate are just unbelievable. I mean, so yeah, I had a chance to talk with him, looking him straight in the face, thanking him for black lung legislation, for protecting coal miners, for those things. Those were historic things that these guys did. I mean, the nuclear proliferation things that Lugar did, taking care of the coal mining industry, taking care of widows, Social Security, Title IX. I just spoke about it the other night at Henry County's JJ. I asked all the student athletes to stand up, all the people that had been athletes. I went to Courtney Cox's funeral this past weekend, and I just looked around and I thought, if there's no Title IX, there's probably not all this effort in women's basketball. So those are things that are historic, and I hope that we can have leaders in the future that give us that kind of—
Two constitutional amendments?
Yep. Yeah.
Would have been a third if ERA had passed. Yep. Mike, your thoughts?
I only met Senator Bayh a couple times, but I always admired the fact that he took the leadership role that he did, especially on the constitutional questions and especially on the presidency, and thought that was historic in a big way. And Lugar, you're talking to the 1974 Marion County Youth for Lugar coordinator. And I thought that was the best job in the world. And then we lost in 74, but he came back in 76. So I've been involved with Senator Lugar one way or another since 74. And
Mark Miles on our podcast with him said that was his first political job was 74.
I took Mark Miles on his first advance trip, and he couldn't find his rear end with both hands. And I've got this great picture when he worked in Lugar's office. There was a meeting on the west side, and Lugar always had props and was showing people on a chart. Well, it's windy that day, and they couldn't keep the chart on the tripod. So they had Miles standing behind it, holding it on the tripod, and he had hair down to his shoulders, and young guy, young political, very smart guy, very bright guy. And so the mayor's photographer took the picture from the side, so you got this great shot of Lugar on the other side pointing very seriously, talking about the issue involved in Mark on the back with his head hanging down, holding on to this thing. And so when he became of the Hallman family, Enterprises. I sent that picture to him and said, boy, you've come a long way from propping up Dick Luger's material to this. And one of the brightest guys ever, but I really did take him on his first advance trip and gave the powers to be in a Luger campaign, gave Mark all the credit for what he did when we left here. Said, oh, thank you. I can't believe you.
And I guess we should square the circle by saying that in 74, in 6 years later, in 1980, Mark Miles ran Dan Quayle's campaign
that
beat Birch Bayh.
Yeah. We had some political experiences together, Mark and I did, but back to Luger, I mean, it's clearly one of the great men that's ever been involved in Indiana politics and Indiana government and the United States politics and government. I was disappointed that his presidential campaign didn't catch on. Of course, the day announced was the day of the Oklahoma City bombing, which kind of took him off the front page of the papers, to say the least. And it really didn't catch on. But when you look back on the things he was talking about, terrorism, in that time, people went, nobody's going to have a suitcase nuclear bomb or nobody's going to do that kind of stuff. Well, guess what? You know, we're talking about that stuff every day, and that's why you have people going through all the checks you do on airplanes and everything else. I mean, he was so far ahead of his time. So when he got announced that he was going to get out of the race, I went as chairman to Washington to stand next to him because everybody's there when you get in.
Right.
Hardly anybody is when you get out. So I can remember going out there and Marty, his chief of staff, said, man, I'm so glad you came here. And he put me right next to him. And I'll never forget that day because the press said, why are you getting out? And Luger said, and I'll never forget this, he said, well, obviously, most people think that I learned to keep my charisma in check. Of course, the press corps just laughed. And all I could think of was, where was that during the campaign?
Well, I was there. He did. He made that announcement in the Agriculture Committee room, and it was full of people.
Yeah.
Jim, let me ask you as a neutral observer, one of the things that we do on the Leaders and Legends podcast is bring people together who are friends, who may not agree on every issue, and talk about shared experiences and their friendship. We did it with Jim Kendall and Ed Tracy, who've been friends for more than 50 years. John Mutz and former Senator, Lieutenant Governor John Mutz, former State Senator Louis Mayhern, who started working together, I think, in the 70s is what they mentioned. Maybe the early 80s. No, it had to be the maybe 70s, early 80s. So this stretches back. We've got a couple more coming up in the same vein as what we're doing here with Robin Winston and Mike McDaniel. As kind of a neutral observer of politics, how much stock do you put into the assertion, it's just not like it used to be?
It's different. It's different. I think anybody who works at the State House, who's been there for a few decades, remembers the time when the Indianapolis Press Club was in business across the street from the State House. And the Press Club, the name's kind of a misnomer. It was really a State House club. It was, you know, the media got a break on membership dues, but it was a place where Republicans and Democrats and lobbyists all came and gathered and all got along. There was always a rule that whatever happened at the Press Club was off the record. And I can tell you, I had some meaningful conversations there, and I'd call somebody back the next day and say, can we go on the record now? it's not just that the Press Club's not there anymore. In fact, the Press Club's it may be that the Press Club's not there because the culture has changed, that people don't hang out together. Excuse me, the way they used to. People don't get along the way they used to. They still do get along. Back to where we started here, if you're a Republican and you reach across the aisle and work with a Democrat, sometimes there's a price to pay with your own people. I mean, people don't.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. People don't prize bipartisan cooperation the way they used to.
Robin, do you remember a time where you reached out to Mike and said, hey, I need your help? And Mike, do you remember a time where you specifically reached out to Robin and say, look, I need your help. Let's talk about something before it gets too heated or gets too out of hand.
I remember whenever they made the remark about Mike, because I had to take the hit on the racist remark. because I'm, of course, the resident, you know, Dark Invader at that point. So I had to respond. And, you know, first off, I told the guy that said that was wrong. Remember now, this is I'm following this person, right? So I called Mike up. I even wrote him a note and said, I don't believe it. That's the way. That's never been in your personality. We don't need to keep that kind of flame going. So I would say not necessarily reach out for his help, but just to say I don't agree with it, and then vouch for it, and then speak every chance I could immediately after that I knew they weren't going to do that. You get to a very dangerous thing, Robert. You start talking about race in politics because it can become very combustible. So I wanted to quell that immediately. The one thing that I used it again this weekend, Mike, I stole it from you. You told me in your family you didn't know that there were not two words before Democrat until you were 20-some years old. Well, I say all the time, I didn't know that there were two words before Republican until I, and people love it. So I remember that.
It goes well in the speech.
It does very well.
My grandfather was the original Archie Bunker conservative.
And he may
And I'm literally, I was at Ball State before I found out that the word Democrat didn't always have two other words in front of it.
So I stole that from you.
I'd say that in my Lincoln Day speeches and people, yeah, that's usually a red meat crowd anyway. You know, they want red meat. They don't want to talk about what the issues of the day.
And then he said to me another thing that I don't call him up and say it, but he said, always give them all the good government that they deserve. So I have learned to give people along the way all the good government.
I just want to say right here, right now, I did appreciate the fact that Robin called me, wrote the note that he wrote, because that really hurt me to the bone that somebody would say that about me. Because if there, I may be a lot of things to a lot of people, but that wasn't one of them. And it really hurt me when the weasel did that. And I've never liked him since. And now I'll probably stay that way for a good long time. But
go ahead, Mike.
Now, one of the things I think Robin and I, before we hang it up here, is how the political parties have changed. When I grew up in the Marion County Republican Organization, which was one of the best in the country at the time.
Under Bulin
and Sweezy and on and on. But there was such regimentation in it. I mean, you had to start as either a vice chairman, vice precinct committeeman, or a precinct committeeman, and work your way up in things. And the organization was what the candidates went to help them get elected. And ever since the Watergate scandal in 1974, candidates start raising their own money instead of the parties being the vessel for the fundraising. And so they became more and more independent, and that has grown through the years. And now a lot of people think a good campaign is just raising enough money and buying enough commercials. Where in our day, it used to be having precinct people, all volunteers, which was hard to recruit, motivate, train, do all that stuff. You think back on what those organizations were and what it is today, because campaigns have gotten away from using the organization, and how parties have changed so much. Now it's just a matter of raising millions of dollars and hiring enough young people in the field to go out and do it and run enough commercials, and that's it. And so parties have morphed. So I was part of that change. You know, my philosophy when I was there with 92 counties, I found out very quickly that we had about a third of the counties that did things very well, a third of them that did one or two things okay, and then a third of them that didn't do anything at all. No, seriously.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Because
right.
Remember, these are all volunteer organizations.
Right.
And so my goal as chairman was to get everybody to move up to the next rung. Those that don't do anything, if I get them to do one thing better, we're ahead of the game. Those that do a few things well, if I can get them to do everything well, then we're way ahead of the game. So that was kind of my philosophy in this thing. Today, you know, I mean, they don't count on the organization, the county by county structure. The county chairman still has some stroke with state elected officials and so on, but as far as being the apparatus for running and winning campaigns, it doesn't exist anymore.
And candidates don't do that as much anymore either, Robert. I mean, I was with Frank O'Bannon. We were in Petersburg, I think, at Pike County. And we had to go to three different...
Town of Gil Hodges.
Oh, okay. We had to go to three different factions in Pike County to assuage all their concerns. But he did it. I mean, we went to this one lady's house, and you know, screen door. You sat in the living room and you had to seek her blessing because she controlled the eastern part of the county. And she let us know that when people drive by her house and see your yard sign, whole county knows what to do. Okay. I was like, wow. Wow.
And they were serious.
And she was dead serious. So, you know, but he went around to see them. Here he is, incumbent governor. I'm not talking about candidate for governor. I'm talking about an incumbent governor. You know, state trooper car pulls up and all that. I mean, it was a big deal, but you have to do that. I went to Jennings County, gave them a fax machine. It was like fire to the natives. But, you know, the bottom line is that we gave them.
Did they have a phone line?
Yeah. So it has changed. But I think a lot of it, though, Mike, is related to the elected officials, too, that are there. I've been around some folks that may not motivate people, let's just say that, to go out and work, okay, for their campaigns.
Very true.
You know, I mean, you're riding in the car and it's like, do I really have to go there? Yeah, you have to go there. It's a union meeting. You have to go there.
But again, the people now think all you got to do is raise some money and be on TV or be on the radio. That's right. It. That's a campaign today.
Yeah, GOTV means get on
and
television.
And the people, the best mm-hmm. campaigns, and I'll point to the Daniels campaign on this one, the best campaigns, and I'll point to the Obama campaign on this one. Obama was really the first to use social media and inspire young people to get out and do stuff.
Yeah.
And did it successfully. Mitch did that too.
Yeah.
Mitch was our equivalent of that as far as the campaign's concerned. He brought people in the process that hadn't using the latest social media. Where, you know, when I got off the show and they were asking me, well, who would you recommend? I said, one, you need to get a younger person to understand social media. Because for me, that wasn't me. I mean, I'm way past that, you know. I can barely turn on my iPhone. You know, one of those kinds of things. But today's campaigns, you got to do that. And that's how another way that the campaigns have changed so dramatically and Mitch got that and still gets it. You see him as president of Purdue and how he uses social media up there.
At Purdue, Mitch? Isn't that right?
I'm telling you. I mean, and to think about a major research institution like that is now going into its eighth year without a tuition increase. You could have two classes go through Purdue and never have a tuition increase.
Hey,
as
somebody who has a son at Purdue, I think it's a wonderful thing.
Well, let me tell you, as a member of the Board of Trustees at Ball State, you know, I can tell you, he's put a lot of pressure on a lot of folks because he's been able to do what he's done. Because it's just unheard of. People have no idea. But that was, you know, again, I think it's that communication that he has. And the good politicians inspire that. And as you said, there are some that aren't, but I'll never forget, I'll tell one quick story. I ran the intern program in the state Senate back in the mid-70s. I had a rule you weren't allowed to talk to the media if you're an intern. Good rule, right?
Right.
So I'm driving into work one day, and I hear Fred Heckman on WIBC say, when we come back from break, we're going to talk to a Senate intern about his impressions of the men and women serving in the Indiana State Senate. And I about wrecked my car on Capitol driving towards the State House. And when I came back, he said, and I won't say the young man's name, Mike Riley from South Bend, Indiana. Said, Mr. Riley, you've been there a month now. What are your impressions of the men and women serving in the Indiana General Assembly? And he said, I'll never forget this as long as I live, on the whole, they're not very smart, but they do represent the entire population of the state of Indiana. So with one sentence, this kid wiped out the entire population of Indiana. What he was trying to say was, look, they're just people like us. Mm-hmm. They're all different. They're not special. They're just people living their lives. They're citizen legislature. That was what he was trying to do, but it didn't come out that way. And I was never so pleased when I got to the office, President Pro Tem Phil Gutman, who is my boss. I was in the office all of 2 minutes, and the phone rang, and he says, McDaniel, is this Riley kid one of ours or one of theirs? I was never never so glad to say it was one of theirs in my life. But his point is, and it goes back to what Robin said, you know, some of these people don't inspire, kind of go out there and do it. They're just regular folks, and some of them don't know how to do that. And the ones that really do, and the ones that motivate and the ones that lead, they're the ones that rise to the top, and they do rise to the top.
Robert, you run a public relations agency and do government relations work and all those things. One fundamental rule when you're doing client pitches is you should know your client. So we're interviewing people to be Frank O'Bannon's consultants, right? And the dude walks in and says, well, the problem with Southern Indiana is a bunch of hill jacks down there. And I'm like, and you know, a lot of them down there are illiterate, not educated, and are not going anywhere. And Frank, you've got to bring them around and move them up. And I was like, toast. And I was doing tap while there. He was talking. And he's sitting there.
And he's from there.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, you just got to watch out those things.
Let me ask one quick question just a few minutes we have left, or a minute or so, to Jim Shella. Again, as a neutral observer, how do we fix, or do you have an RX to fix some of the problems we discussed here today?
Well, I'm not sure we got into problems an awful lot. We talked about some pretty good things, but
about people not talking as much, as not hanging out as much, a little more divisiveness, a little more prickliness. I remember when I was comms director for Ballard, Ed Tracy would do a news conference blasting Ballard. He would call me and say, I'm going to do a news conference in front of the City Market in 30 minutes. Come out there and join me. Let's have some fun. Yeah. And the only reason I didn't go out there and have fun with him is because Okeson said I couldn't. Paul Okeson, the chief of staff. But he's like, come on out here. Let's have some fun. And what we've heard a little bit today, along with some great stories, is that things have changed. Is there a way to get them better?
I think what we've talked about here is the good people in politics and how you need good people in politics. And I think that the current circumstance leads good people to stay out of politics. And what we need is more good people to get involved in elected office, as well as in the parties and in activism. And I think politics has become a dirty word. I have people all the time say, how could you stand to cover politics? And what I tell them is there's politics everywhere. There's politics at church, school, at home.
Just because there's not a vote doesn't mean there isn't politics.
And the good thing about politics is that everybody knows what it is. You're free to question everybody's motives. But you got to get involved. It affects all of us every day. And we got to find a way. I don't know what it is, but we've got to find a way to get more good people involved.
I also think that the way to reinvigorate the parties and to get the parties more involved, which I think would be a good thing, is to eliminate primaries altogether and go back to conventions for statewide elected officials like United States Senator, Governor, so forth and so on. Then that person that's going to work in a county is all of a sudden relevant because they're the votes that make the difference. And you would re-energize the two political parties overnight if you did that. Plus, think how much money you would save if the candidates in the primary don't have to go out and spend $3-4 million each to beat it out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You'd save that money going forward, and so you don't have to raise as much money, which is also a major problem.
Be bad for TV stations.
I think there are plenty of benefits to going back to doing that and getting people more involved. And I'm starting to sound like, you know, one of the old guys sitting in the balcony on the Muppets, but seriously, I think if we went back to that, we'd reinvigorate the system.
Robert. I wish there were more petitions for people to run for office. I mean, you know, when you meet with a party chair, I had this one dude meet with us, and he came up from Southern Indiana, and he was going to self-fund his campaign to the tune of $2,000 running for Congress, right? So, but he didn't tell me that amount of money until later in the thing. But he comes up and he sits in our room, and we're all sitting there with pads because he's a doctor, and we're all excited, and we think millions of dollars. And I said, so what's your main issue? Well, sterilization of the poor people in the state. And I was like, what did you just say? So I turned to Tim Henderson, who was working. I said, Tim's got it from here. Thanks a lot for coming. He was done away. Let him take it the rest of the way.
Did you ever have candidates for president come visit you on local candidates for president?
Oh, yes. Remember, there was a young woman who was running. She was at Ball State. Yeah. Her mother drove around with magnets on her car and was very mad that I wouldn't let her speak at our state convention because she was going to be the nominee.
I had my assistant.
I'm sorry, against President Clinton. So, you know.
My assistant one day said, Mike, there's a gentleman here to see you. He wants to run for office. I said, well, sure, have him come in. So I came in. He was from Henry County. And he said, well, I wanted to come in and start with you because I am going to run for president of the United States. I said, oh, really? I said, do you know what that entails? He said, what do you mean? I said, I just told you, and I'll you know, call over to the clerk's office and get my name on the ballot. And I said, well, first of all, you have to have 500 certified signatures from each congressional district in Indiana, and they have to be certified before you can get on the ballot. And then take that and multiply it times 50, because no two states are the same. You got to meet all their criteria in all 50 states. And this guy was looking at me like, what? But clearly, you get people who really don't understand the system that come in and either want to be governor or United States senator or whatever, who don't have any idea, and bless their hearts, they care enough that they want to get involved. But there's some basic understanding. I used to get that all the time. I don't know if you did, but I did.
Robert, I mean, I know we're running out of time, but I'll just tell you this. It's great doing this story. Part of what you're asked is being done by this, having people talk. So those of you listening, we can work together. It doesn't have to be this hard wall build up between our parties. But I was a little kid listening to the transistor radio of the conventions when these states would get out and do the Democratic convention. And it was a lifelong dream to be able to do that. So I got to do the roll call for Indiana.
Oh, that's right.
Right? So I'm up there like, Indiana, 88. You know, and this is your time, right? So I'm doing it. But I looked at the video the other day, and check this out. I'm like, Indiana is proud to class. And I look, and there's these people behind me that are leaning into the camera shot to get themselves on national TV and pushing people aside so they could be on TV. I was like, are you kidding me? That's what they were doing behind me? So, you know.
Everybody wants to be part of the action.
Everybody wants to be part of the action.
Like Robin, I grew up watching those and just loved them. And my favorite thing was the roll call.
Yeah.
And I always dreamed of doing it, and I got to do it three times.
Wow.
And,
were you ever an elector? Presidential
yes.
Elector?
Yeah. I was on the famous Bush-Gore.
You did cast the deciding vote?
And I made sure I did it in my printing, which I print everything, but I did it in letters about this big for George Bush because I didn't want anybody to misunderstand who I was for. But I was an elector. I was glad to have that honor. But back to the other, I got the chance in Philadelphia to give the roll call. You know, the great state of Indiana, the home of Senator Richard Lugar, you know, you do all that stuff. So right before it came time to give the roll call, the bat phone rang from headquarters up above, which never rang. We tried to order a pizza with ours out in San Diego. And the thing rings, and I pick it up and says, Mr. McDaniel? I said, yes. And he said, when it gets to you, we want Indiana to pass because we want Texas to put George Bush over the top. And so we'll pass, but we'll come back to you. He said, now you can get up and say, but then pass. I said, okay. So when it came my turn, I got up and did the whole thing. The great state of Indiana, the home of Richard Lugar, I went on and on and on for about 2 minutes. I go, we pass. I was resoundingly booed from the floor of the convention. But I got to do it a second time when it came back around.
I was at the Republican convention in 2012, and I should say that my Uyghur partner and I, David Brooks, beat the pants off of Mike McDaniel and Rex Early several games in a row. In a hurricane. And I could also need to thank, because this is absolutely true, I had the great honor in 2018 of directing the IPS referenda that passed to help that school district. And I would not have had that opportunity if it wasn't for Robin Winston recommending me. Thank you very much, Robin. And when it comes to the best of what he does, there's nobody ranks higher than Jim Shella. Thank you, Jim. We all love you.
Thank you.
Hope you're doing well. Thank you for joining us on the Leaders and Legends podcast. And we want to thank our sponsors, Girl Scouts of Central Indiana, the Crown Plaza Hotel and Grand Hall and Conference Center at Historic Union Station, and McAllister Machinery, your friendly neighborhood Caterpillar dealer. Thank you very much for listening to Leaders and Legends, brought to you by Veteran Strategies Incorporated. If you want to contact us about this program or our menu of public relations services, please send us an email at robert@veteranstrategies.com. That's robert@veteranstrategies.com.